You're listening to Zen Crossing, where spirituality meets everyday life, with your host, Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center.
Today's theme is being mindful of how we categorize. We'll be talking about being mindful in all the ways that we often categorize people, even in subtle ways. Our guest today is Serena Maurer. Serena's teaching, consulting, and writing bring together mindfulness, compassion, and social justice practices and frameworks. She's developed and taught trauma and oppression-informed mindfulness, meditation, and yoga classes, and programs for the University of Washington Mindfulness Project, Street Yoga, Casa Latina, the Puget Sound Zen Center's Children's Program, Tiger Lily Yoga, and Consejo Counseling and Referral Services. She also offers mindfulness and compassion-based social justice consulting for organizations and schools. Serena has a PhD in gender, women, and sexuality studies with a focus on race, nation, and gender. Serena's been a member of our Zen community for a couple of years now, and she's influenced the way I see the world. Thanks for that, Serena, and thanks for coming today.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Serena, I wonder, how do you define mindfulness?
I was thinking about this, and I do think it's kind of a slippery concept. I think one of those things that happens, when we try to talk about what's happening in something we practice is it's hard to figure out the words to describe it. So I often feel like the words feel inadequate. But I think that I do think of wide open awareness as a kind of phrase that feels helpful. Pointing to a kind of bigger mind, getting out of the ways that we usually think about things, the ways we're caught in seeing the world, interpreting the world, ourselves included, and getting to something a little more spacious, and hopefully a little more clear, a little more clarity.
Nice. Yeah. Along those lines of clarity, you've studied the way our minds have a tendency to categorize other people and ourselves as well. Can you talk a little bit about what you've learned in those studies?
Sure. It always feels like a big area to kind of reduce down. But I think at its most basic, the ways that I learned to think about categorization of people are in terms of systems of categorization. So that we are all taught from a very young age to categorize ourselves and others who we encounter in our lives into systems of categorization like race and gender, class, nationality, sexuality, disability and ability. And when we position people within these systems of categorization, we position them in hierarchical relationships to one another. We kind of create these boxes that we position people in, and some of those boxes are considered normal and good, and some of those are considered more abnormal and less good. So a lot of people will talk about particular systems of categorization and how those position people, but another thing that we know is that all the systems intersect with one another, right? So we're not only categorized by race or by class, but also by gender and by nationality all simultaneously. So there's some overlap between the systems, and that shapes the boxes that we're put into.
That we put other people into and that we put ourselves into. How can we use mindfulness to bring greater awareness of how we categorize ourselves and others, do you think?
So I think that those moments of categorization, they're really instantaneous because they become so part of how we learn to interpret the world. We don't see a person in front of us and think, oh, I'm going to categorize that person as white, right? It just happens in our brain. It's so automatic at this point because we've been doing it all our lives. And so that's that kind of what I would say, kind of small mind. It's like, you know, what's happening in the moment, how we're reacting to it, how we're interpreting the world. And I find that if we can settle back into something bigger where we can notice that moment of categorization. So we're settling back into a space of awareness from which we can notice what the mind's doing. Just like when we practice mindfulness meditation, we're noticing the thoughts passing through our minds or the emotions passing through us or physical sensations in the body. We can do the same thing with the thoughts around categorization. So we slip into this wider space of awareness. And I also think that when I think about mindfulness, you know, it's people define mindfulness as sort of, I mean, there's all different definitions, right? But as a being aware of what's happening as it's happening or something like that. Or some people say paying attention to what's happening as it's happening, right? And partly it seems important to recognize that it's not just paying attention, but it's a place of awareness that we can slip into through that paying attention, right? Like, you know, you see like popular magazines talking about mindfulness or something. It's just like, well, just drink your tea mindfully, right? Mm-hmm. As if it's just, it's sort of an action we can take. But I actually think we can actually get to a space of awareness by trying to purposely bring our attention. So it's not just the action of purposely bringing our attention, but it's trying to get to this bigger space of awareness through that practice or action. And then the other thing I think about mindfulness that feels so important to point out, especially when we're talking about categorization, is that it needs to be done with a lot of friendliness, compassion, understanding, whatever you want, you know, different words you could use. But it's not like we're saying like, oh, I just categorized that person as disabled and that makes me a bad person, right? Like, why am I doing that? Why do I think that way? I mean, we've all been taught these systems of categorization through no fault of our own. And if we can bring some compassionate awareness to those moments of categorization, that's where I feel like we can get some opening, some increase in our understanding of how our mind's working and hopefully some shift.
Mm-hmm. It's hard. Right? It's hard work to loosen categorization.
Yeah.
And it also makes me think that it's a kind of deeper letting go of things than simply letting go of our thoughts. You know, if we're just drinking our tea, then we're just letting go of our thoughts and our worries. But this is what you're suggesting, I think, is that we let go of something even deeper, the way we categorize things, the way we categorize people. Maybe even the way we categorize everything. Is that true?
I think so. And I think it, like, you know, when we say it's deeper, maybe it depends on which thoughts we're trying to let go of, right? If we're sitting and drinking our tea and some thoughts come through that we really identify with, those can be really hard to let go of, right? Maybe some thought comes through my mind about being a mother and I have to do this thing. I'm so caught up in that because of some identification I have about the job I should be doing, which is about how I've been gendered in this world to believe that I should be a mother in a certain way, right? And so I have a lot of identification around that. And I think that certain thoughts we identify with more than others. And so I think it's especially hard, those ones where we feel this tightness, right? This constriction around it. And there's something about this is really about who I am or something scary there.
Yeah, very much so. It goes right to the core of our identity, I think, a lot of these ways we categorize. Do you think that being mindful about these different ways that we categorize ourselves and other people, well, tell me, how do you think that can be helpful? How does that help me in my life? Or how does it help others?
I think it helps both. I mean, I do think that most white people in this world are walking around with very little awareness of their own whiteness and how that has shaped their lives. And, you know, a lot of people talk a lot about white privilege. And I think that that is very important for white people to understand the privileges they have through their whiteness, right? Like, what is easier about my life because I am put into the box white in this world. And I also think it's really important for white people to understand what they're losing. Right?
That they're, by putting themselves in that box?
By being put in that box by others and putting themselves in that box. Or we might think about masculinity. Like, what are we losing for young boys when we teach them that they're not allowed to have feelings? Right? We can, that's kind of a clear one. It's kind of easy to see, right? Like, there's a sadness there, right? There's a loss. So I think if we can practice as teachers or parents or adults around them, we can practice some awareness of, oh, I'm expecting this boy at this moment to bottle up or just get over it or whatever phrases we have, you know, you'll be fine, right? Then I am putting him in a box where I'm expecting him to not be a kind of feeling being, right? And then if we can also teach him that, oh, you might be being taught this and it's okay to push against that. It's okay to challenge that with compassionate understanding that, you know, the people who are teaching that, it's not out of malice, right? They're not trying to be bad people. They're not, they don't want to hurt that child, right? But they have come to understand him in these certain ways because of the boxes in their minds that they've been taught. So I think, yeah, helping ourselves and helping others.
frees us to think about people in a broader way, I imagine, and also give people more possibilities. Like if I'm a parent, for instance, and I think this is the only way to approach my son or my daughter, that limits not only myself, but the way, the assumptions I have about what they can do in life or how they ought to act or be or feel.
Absolutely. Mm. And I think it also, I mean, these systems of categorization are made to divide us, right? That we are understanding ourselves as I exist in this box, this other person exists in that box. That's really not so true. We actually have a lot in common, and we actually are all relational beings. We all exist through relations with each other. I can't just exist here without the food that has been touched by so many hands to get to my mouth. Right? I can pretend that I'm this sort of individual being that can survive on my own, right? But who built this house I live in? Who created this car that I got here in, right? There's so many examples, right? And so I think that it's a fallacy that we create these structures in our mind to separate ourselves out into these little boxes, and it can really shore up individualism and the sense of ourselves as individual beings disconnected from others in the world.
Another word for box might be tribe. I've been thinking recently about how tribal we are sometimes. Mm-hmm. I'm on team blue, you're on team red, mm-hmm. and no matter what happens, I'm going to stick with that team.
Mm-hmm. Well, you see that a lot in contemporary discourses about immigration, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Sure, this assumption. I mean, these were national communities that were created artificially, right? All of these borders were drawn around all of these nations, right? I am not sort of naturally an American, right? I happen to be born in a place that some time ago somebody claimed as America, right? And then because I was born here, I got these citizenship papers. My friend who came here from Mexico did not, right? And so we've decided that she sits outside this national community that I belong to. You could call it tribal.
I wonder, Serena, what are you doing now? You're doing a lot of things. What are you doing now that most excites you, or at least tell me something that does excite you?
I've been doing this mindfulness program with the staff at Casa Latina, and one of the things that's been super interesting to me is that through discussing mindfulness and compassion and loving kindness with the staff, and through practicing that together, the staff has come up with a critique of mindfulness individualism in the West, which is super interesting to me because it's a critique that I'm really interested in, is how I see mindfulness programming in the West being very much about our individual selves and, you know, how can I work on myself and sort of figure out my thoughts, and then I get off the cushion and go back into the world. But knowing that we're all relational beings, and, you know, what about working together in our relations? And so it's been interesting to me to see how this work, these kind of two kinds of mindfulness and social justice work, have come together in this project.
Great. Serena, thank you so much for coming in today.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much for, as I said before, teaching me so much.
My pleasure.